everyone, and welcome to the 99 Yards podcast. I'm your host, Adam Barton, and this week I'm joined by Duncan Terry and Gridiron & Wine's Shona Duthie. How are things, guys?
Yeah, really good, thank you. How are you getting on?
Yeah, all good. I'm getting used to quarantine life, but I think we all are at this point. How about you, Duncan?
Yeah, going well. Working from home and loving it still. Euro 96 on the telly. We've got the new season to talk about. Loving it.
So this week, we're going to focus on the prospects for the 2020, particularly two AFC West teams, the LA Chargers and the Denver Broncos. We spoke to the Chargers defensive end, Isaac Rochelle, as well as Michael McCade from Broncos Europe. We'll also debut a new segment, a debate of what the best Super Bowl is during the NFL UK era. Let's kick things off with a big one. I spoke to Isaac Rochelle from the Denver Broncos about the current situation and learning from Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. So I'd like to start off by asking you to tell us about what it's like being an NFL player during this virus pandemic. I know it's out of season, but how has it affected you?
Yeah, I think as an NFL athlete right now, it's probably the most challenging times that NFL athletes have had. You know, we don't have access to facilities, our facilities and any gym. It's like nothing is open. There's really not many resources available to be able to lift and maintain being in shape and whatnot. So it's been difficult. A lot of guys have had to be very creative, myself included. I've had to find creative ways to lift and stay in shape. But it's just a weird time. It's a weird time to be a professional athlete.
So you've been moving furniture around the house for weight training then?
I've been throwing furniture through walls, moving buildings. No, but I built a whole kind of at-home gym. I have a garage, so put a lot of stuff in there. But like I said, it's just been a lot of creativity, utilizing all my resources outside of gyms and the facility to try to create what is the best workout environment in these circumstances.
So going through your career, tell us about your experience on the practice squad with the Chargers and then moving onto the active roster. What's it like on a daily basis being on a practice squad?
Oh, it's really challenging. You know, for me, the biggest challenge was making the team the first week and then getting put on practice squad the second week. Just kind of a slap in the face, caught me off guard. But, you know, for me, it was a humbling experience. It definitely, you know, it made me create habits and a routine that would help me later on in my career. And so now looking back, I still lean on the same routine and some of the same habits that I created during that time.
What sort of development did you have to do from becoming a college player at Notre Dame to becoming an NFL player with the Chargers?
I think just seeing the whole thing as football is my job and not necessarily an extracurricular. I'm not doing school and football. Football is my entire world. And then with that, everything you do outside of actually practicing still contributes to your job. So, for instance, eating. Every time I eat a meal, I see it as fuel and as an opportunity to get better, not necessarily, just whatever. It's everything becomes a little bit more intentional that has to do with my performance on the field.
So do you have to limit yourself in terms of cheat days and things like that? Do you have any in season?
No doubt. I'm the type of person, a cheat day will turn into a cheat week, so I just try to stay away from it as much as possible.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Did you develop more pass rush moves, or was it more about becoming faster and more agile and stronger from the college to the NFL?
I think for me, it was just becoming a better D lineman, which includes the pass rush and all that. I think the agility, speed, strength, size, that's already there. I mean, that's kind of what gets you in the NFL. And then I think once you're there, it's a matter of fine tuning everything.
So on a down to down basis, do you go into each snap with a plan of how you're going to attack the lineman you're up against, or would you do you react exactly to what he's doing, or is it a bit of both? I guess
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we go into the week game planning and preparing for the different O linemen, right? So we break down each O lineman, we kind of identify what we should do against them, what we shouldn't do against them because they're better at it. And you have somewhat of a game plan when you line up. But as you know from watching football, everything changes as soon as the ball snaps. And there's a lot of moving parts. So sometimes your plan doesn't work. So it's you have a plan, but sometimes it becomes a little bit more reactionary.
You have obviously Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram on your team. Do you learn a lot from them and exchange ideas on how best to get to the quarterback?
Oh, no doubt. I learn a lot from those guys. And, you know, they've been Joey and Mel both have been great resources. They're so smart. They know a lot about the game. And I definitely feel like I've gotten a lot better playing with them.
You went to the playoffs with the Chargers last, 2018, and had quite a season both individually and as a team. Tell us about the environment there. Was it what gave you the success, I guess?
Yeah, it was a really cool environment. It's always exciting. I mean, you talk about having such a good season and playing in the playoffs. It's just fun. Every game is fun. Everything, like you're saying, is just exciting. It's a great environment. It just really was unfortunate at the end of the season having it end how it did. But that in my NFL experience has probably been my most enjoyable season.
You guys, I'm a Ravens fan, and you had quite an innovative approach to defending the Ravens in the wild card game. But
It was a fun game. I mean, we went into the game a little frustrated because they had beat us in the regular season. So it was kind of an opportunity for us to, you know, show ourselves, prove ourselves as a defense, because they had defensively a pretty good game against us the first time. And we had a chip on our shoulder going into the game.
And obviously went with a far faster approach with more defensive backs on the field as well, from if my memory serves right.
Yeah, well, you have to do that with a guy like Lamar. I mean, you have to think creatively. And I think that's what's interesting about the NFL. You have a lot of different guys who can play a lot of different positions. So even when you make those switches, it still works out.
Moving from one MVP to another, obviously you've got Patrick Mahomes in your division. What's it like playing against them twice a season?
Yeah, I mean, you're going against the best of the best. I mean, he's right now, I think, one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. I think a lot of people would agree with that. And it's what you want. I mean, if we can make it out of our division, we've got a good chance of winning the Super Bowl. So I love it the way it plays out. But definitely going against him, you're challenged every time.
Obviously, it's a bit of a tough question to answer at the moment. But what are your plans and goals for the coming season, assuming we do start in September?
Yeah, I think for me right now, it's just a matter of getting better every day. I want to be in a good place when we get to the season, given the circumstances. My thought is just that a lot of guys, you know, this is going to separate kind of the guys who are focused and know how to take care of their bodies during this time and the guys who are not. So that's kind of personal. And then as the team, we want to win a Super Bowl. And as a team, I hope that everybody has my same mindset of wanting to separate themselves and be prepared for the season. And then we'll be rolling come September.
You mentioned obviously about your everything being a bit more intentional now that you're a professional rather than in college. Are you glad that you're a veteran rather than it's your rookie year this season? And obviously how disrupted it's going to be.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is like I mentioned earlier, this is the toughest time to be a professional athlete, probably, you know, in history, right? And then you talk about not ever experiencing the NFL and your first experience is this. I just think back to when I was a rookie, how crucial OTAs and kind of this period was in my development. And the fact that they don't have that is going to be really challenging. But again, it's really going to separate the guys who are focused and intentional on treating this as a job and not as a hobby.
So tell us about Local Human, which I believe is an initiative you set up with during the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, so Local Human is an apparel company. What we say is it's an apparel company with intention. So what we do is, one, we donate a shirt for every shirt bought. So we're donating a shirt to foster centers all over the country for everyone bought. But we go a step further, and for our campaign shirts that are rotating monthly and that support a campaign of the month, we donate $10 per shirt to that campaign. So as an example, last month we partnered with Meals on Wheels, which is just a meal delivery service for the elderly. For every shirt bought, we were able to donate 3 meals and a wellness check. You know, this month we're partnering with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And with every shirt bought, again, we're donating a shirt, and then we're also donating $10, you know, to support and educate people on mental that have been affected by mental illness and suicide. So it's been a cool thing that we've been able to develop while in quarantine. And it's been really, you know, fulfilling.
Is it something, is it important to you that it does, that it supports a variety of charities, or is it just by chance that you've obviously done Meals on Wheels and suicide prevention?
Yeah, so Meals, yes, for me it is. I want to support a variety of charities. You know, Meals on Wheels, in the midst of Corona, made a lot of sense. Elderly population was the most affected on all different phases. And then now we're in May. May is Mental Health Month, so it makes sense to talk about mental illness and suicide prevention and some of these more difficult topics to talk about. And then moving forward, we're just gonna, you know, keep the same model and kind of based on what time of the year it is and kind of what fits, we're gonna choose organizations to support. But it gives us a lot of freedom, and it's exciting for us to be able to look forward to supporting all these different charities.
I believe you also have a social media thing called See You on Sunday as well, which seems important to you. And do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so See You on Sunday is all about just talking about social media health, with the start being to just take a day off of social media. So what I encourage people to do is just take Saturdays off of social media. And the point in doing that is just to start this conversation, right? So when you log off, you start to notice some of your habits of maybe reaching for your phone to get on social media after you told yourself you wouldn't. You might think that it's harder or easier than anticipated. And that's kind of what I would like people to, you know, start thinking about. I would like people to start challenging themselves to evaluate their use and kind of what the relationship should look like. What I always tell people is we spend so much time talking about sleep health as an example, because, and they talk about, you know, you need to sleep X amount of hours. Well, studies show that we spend similar amounts of time on our phones and on social media. So we should be talking about social media health in the same way that we talk about sleep health. So that's kind of the goal of See You on Sunday.
So that was some great insight from Isaac about being an NFL player during the current pandemic and his journey from the practice squad to being a starter within the Chargers playoff run. Also, remember to check out localhuman.co for his charitable exploits. Shona, how are you feeling about the Chargers season in 2020?
I think they'll improve. I still don't think they're going to be quite there yet. I think they'll maybe go about 7-9. You know, 2 years ago, we were looking at the Chargers actually being a very viable threat in the AFC. You know, they were gearing in that playoffs towards eventually beating Brady, but sadly didn't manage. They're getting a fresh start, obviously, with Justin Herbert. I mentioned on Gridiron and Wine podcast that we had last week that I wasn't quite convinced of that pick, and I was quickly shot down by my co-host, so they told me wrong. But I think this is going to be a really pretty productive defensive team. But I still think they need to work it on their offense. I think you win in the NFL because of your offensive play. So I think Herbert, I've heard he's a really great kid and he's really hardworking. So I think, but obviously this is his first rookie year, so I think it's kind of going to be like a rebuild year, a rebuild roster for them. But I do I expect maybe quite a lot from them in terms of showing progression. So, and I thought their video was really cool for their promo for the schedule release. So give them some little credit for that. I thought that was really nice. So, but on the other hand, I think they'll go about 7-9.
I think I was. I've been really impressed by the way the Chargers approached the season. They've replaced Phillip Rivers, who's off to have one last run at the Super Bowl with the Colts, and they replaced him with someone who has impressed me as I've been watching him in draft season. I'm sort of surprised he hasn't really resonated with everyone. Everyone seems to be doubting him somewhat, but they've got some great pieces around him. You know, some real blue chip talent. You've got great wide receivers in Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. A good offensive line, which they added Trey Turner and Brian Bulaga to, although they did lose Okun's, so they may be struggling at left tackle. They re-signed Henry Hunter, and Austin Eckler is looking really good. On defense, you know, they've still got Ingram and Bosa. They've added Kenneth Murray in the first round. They came back up for him. And they've added Chris Harris at corner opposite Casey Hayward. And, of course, Derwin James as well. So, yeah, they've got some really, really good talent, if not huge depth. Obviously, spoke to Isaac Rochelle. He had a great rookie season, didn't he? Five sacks, which is pretty good considering who he plays with and who he has to, who's in front of him in the team. So, you know, they've got a good squad there. And I think they could do well. But, yeah, they're up against the Chiefs, aren't they? So,
yeah, I was going to say that. The thing with these two teams is both of them are fighting for a wild card place, let's be honest, unless something happens to Pat Mahomes or the majority, a significant amount of the Chiefs' line. The big question for me is who starts under centre for the Chargers from day one. Anyone who's particularly this season, anyone who's a marginal choice to as a rookie to start, is they're less likely to start surely with the uncertainty. It's something that Isaac Rochelle mentioned actually about how difficult it will be to make the leap in any year, let alone when you're having to do virtual workouts rather than regular workouts. So I think Tyrod Taylor might see more time than we first thought. I wonder how much time how much they've got left in Keenan Allen. Obviously he's a great player, but he is getting a bit long in the tooth, but they have got a great defensive pieces to build around with Nick Bosa, Derwin James, and Kenneth Murray, who they drafted a couple of weeks ago. So it'll be interesting to see how they go and whether they do start to build around a defensive team rather than almost an air raid team like the 2006 Chargers were.
I think it was essential for them, though, to move on from Phillip Rivers. You know, he was quite getting like the drama queen. So I feel like with the two new quarterbacks they have in there, they won't have to deal with that situation anymore, which I think will only be quite beneficial for them.
100%. But it's definitely a tough call between Taylor, who is steady but nothing more, and Herbert, who definitely was a prospect coming in, let alone he had quite a big learning curve, from what I understand of it, coming into the season, and he's only going to be tougher this season of all seasons.
Hey, I'm a big fan of them playing someone else first. any team doing that, you know, Tyrod Taylor is okay. He's not going to be the answer, and they've signed they drafted Herbert really in the first round, so he's going to be the guy. But yeah, like you say, long off season this season, a very strange one. He's not getting the chance to learn the playbook with the other team at the same time. So, you know, sitting for a while, you know, sit until they're ready, sit until they're 0-4, and then do what the Broncos did with a quarterback we'll be discussing. So I don't mind that at all.
I wish the Chargers luck, though. They're one of my like soft spot teams. I always like them doing quite well.
I think the flip side is of any rookies or particularly quarterbacks that are on the bubble of whether they're starters or not, is this is the season to be tried out, because you're not going to have any crowds booing you or anything, are you?
Not unless you go to the Atlanta Falcons with their pumped in sounds.
There is that.
I think there's interesting quarterback situations elsewhere in the NFC, but that's for another podcast.
Now, in the same division, there's another team hoping to topple the Chiefs, the Denver Broncos, who had quite a draft. Somewhat quiet since Peyton Manning retired, but potentially they found their quarterback last season in Drew Lock. Let's hear what Michael McQuaid had to say to Duncan this week about their prospects for 2020.
I'm joined by Michael from Broncos Europe. How's things? How's the last few weeks been treating you?
It's an interesting few weeks, man. Obviously, I know it's hard times for everybody out there. First of all, thanks for having me on. I know we really appreciate it. It's been okay. You know, obviously, we've had the draft, we've had the schedule release, and now I guess we're entering that abyss. No sport in general. Usually there's something like football or something to watch, but no, it's pretty quiet, man.
I've been watching a lot of the Euro 96 relive. It's been good fun. We had Dennis Bergkamp and Holland today. But yeah, American football. We're going to preview the Denver Broncos season whenever that starts. First of all, how pleased were you 2019? Obviously a 7-9 finish, but after an 0-4 start. And you've got yourself a shiny new quarterback there. How are you feeling?
I think you've actually hit the nail on the head there at the very end. Shiny new quarterback, and that's about it. I think if you go from last season, obviously Drew Lock won the last, he won four out of the last five. Fantastic. There is a young offense there, which is fantastic as well. But I'll be honest, I think the first half of the season wasn't great. I think the players would admit that themselves. We had Dalton Reiser on last night, and he literally said last night that, you know, we didn't play to the standard that we should have last season, and we will get there. But I think in comparison, obviously, you know, this is last year was the well, I guess another season where the Broncos didn't make the playoffs. But at that, at the same time, it was a season where you could see potential happening now. And yes, we got that quarterback in Drew Lock, but to see guys like Philip Lindsay come into his own, and also a guy like Noah Fant, Courtland Sutton, I really think that this team is going places. And I'm really looking forward to it, man, in that sense.
Yeah, you've got yourself a big three there on the offense in Locke, Sutton, and Lindsay. Well, and Fant, of course. Mm-hmm. Was last season Vic Fangio's first, or was it his second? Or
yes, it was his first. It was his first season as the head coach for the team, and then before that we had a lovely guy called Vance Joseph, who unfortunately didn't get us to the playoffs. And then he left at the two seasons ago now, and Vic Fangio's came in. Completely new system, completely new sort of viewpoint on the team. A lot more control now with Fangio than potentially Vance Joseph would have had. Elway has given up a lot of the reins in that sense. So yeah, it's looking good for 2020, hopefully.
Yeah, no, he's obviously building something. He's got his plan. I mean, in free agency, you've got yourselves Melvin Gordon, who will play with Philip Lindsay, and Grant Glasgow on offense. And then a couple of big names on defense as well, Gerald Casey and AJ Boye. You're really taking advantage of having a quarterback on their rookie deal, aren't you? And really going for it now. You must be pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, I think the free agency pickups have been absolutely fantastic. I know, obviously, Gerald Casey going in the trade in that sense, but even guys like Graham Glasgow and seeing Melvin Gordon come in, and it's common. It's common knowledge now. There was a bit of a kick-up whenever we came after Melvin Gordon. Philip Lindsay did come out and say, you know, I'm a bit, you know, what's going on here? I thought I was a lead back, but he has accepted now that competition is good, and if we're going to have somebody as the bell cow or somebody that's going to come in on the odd third down, let's have it, because at the end of the day, win the West, we need to score upwards of 25 to 30 points a game, and if we don't have players like Melvin Gordon, like Philip Lindsay, and a good solid defence in guys that are coming in as well, and it's not going to happen. So I think every move so far has been a positive move. In terms of what we can do to get even better, I guess that's probably for a different question, but definitely to improve that line in that sense.
Absolutely. I mean, on defence, you lost Chris Harris and Derek Wolfe, and Casey and Boye, they're not similar players, but playing the same sort of positions. So it's mm-hmm. sort of like for like, isn't it? Is the defence not going to change too much, do you think?
I don't think it'll change too much, but I think losing guys, obviously losing Chris Harris is a big loss in the sense he was literally the guy that was the main focus in that defense. He was the guy in that locker room that really brought the team together and was very opinionated as well. This is a guy, obviously, that went and won Super Bowl 50. Derek Wolfe as well, a guy that loved Denver, a guy that probably would have finished his career in Denver. But I guess at the end of the day, John Elway wanted to just maybe hit reset and just go for it again. I obviously wish Chris Harris Jr. the best in LA, and I wish both the best in Baltimore. I'm very happy with Casey. I think he's a great pickup from Tennessee. And ironically now, yes, the first game of the season for us is going to be against Tennessee, who a lot of analysts now seem to think they're on a downwards trajectory. I mean, they're probably saying that, and then we're going to go out and lose them first week. But I guess it remains to be seen in that sense.
I guess that all depends on whether Tannehill can maintain, doesn't it? But yeah, Jarrell Casey, what a pickup, and for so cheap as well. Obviously, they're offloading him from the cap, I guess, but it's going to be a tremendous player for you guys. But then on offense, they went into the draft in their first two picks. They picked up two very good, one of them, you know, very high profile wide receivers when you've already got Courtland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. I mean, were you surprised with that?
I was surprised with the second pick. First of all, getting Jerry Jeudy is an absolute steal at 15. I was amazed that the Raiders went and got Ruggs at 11, I think it was 11. Because I was sitting there watching it going, right, there's no way Judy's going to be sitting there at 15. We're going to have to trade up. But, you know, Jeudy, who was obviously the wide receiver, won Alabama, one of the best colleges in the States. And for him, you know, to come onto this team, he really has the potential. And I'm saying it now so you can screenshot this or record it for next year. I think he has the potential to go over 1,000 yards next season, 100%. Him and Sutton in the wide receiver slots. And then obviously as well, now we've brought in another guy, KJ Hamler, who was the wide receiver at Penn State. That was an interesting pick in the basis that, you know, obviously once John Elway goes after a wide receiver, he's already got a lot of young guys there, so he's probably going to stop. But no, he goes in second night and goes to get KJ Hamler. He actually didn't run the 40-yard dash at the combine, but there's a lot of tape on him, and he's very, very fast. John Elway has claimed that he has ran a 40-yard time of under 4 seconds. That remains to be seen if that is going to be true or not, but he's a very, very fast guy. So I think if it all works out, you know, Jeudy, Hamler, Courtland Sutton, even Tim Patrick as well, there is an offense there that is firstly very, very young, but has massive potential as well, which is going to be really, really good.
He's absolutely giving your new quarterback as much help as he can. Hamler, I was really impressed with. I wanted him myself in Seattle. Probably a prototypical slot receiver, isn't he? While Jeudy and Sutton will play on the outside. Then looking at the rest of your draft class, not a lot of names in there I recognise. Lloyd Cushenberry was interesting because you've obviously just got Graham Glasgow and they both play in the centre position. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, one may move to guard. But, I mean, what was there anyone else in there that struck you from the rest of the draft class or even undrafted free agents?
Well, I definitely think, in terms of what you're saying with Lloyd Cushenberry, it's an interesting pick. But at the time of when he was on the board, he was the best player left in that position. So it does remain to be seen what's going to happen there. One guy that stood out for me, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his surname because Elway started drafting boys and I was like, what is going on here? Well, I'll tell you what, man, two guys. First of all, Alberto. I'm not going to say his surname. I can't pronounce
I've just been writing Albert myself.
tight end from the same college that Drew Lock went to in Missouri. So I think it's buzzing. Like, you know, you're obviously picking up guys there that Drew Lock wants to play with, guys that is going to give him confidence. So, man, I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think he scored a touchdown literally just under 25% of times that he's picked up the ball from a pass in college. I know the NFL is a lot more difficult, but obviously having Noah Fant already, having a guy like Alberto is going to be unreal. And then a guy at the very, very end of the draft that we picked, well, I think it was in round 5 or round 6, Natean Moody. So he is a really, really good pickup in the sense that this guy as a guard didn't actually complete his... he didn't complete a season in the college, in college without actually being injured. But if that wasn't the case, he was projected to go first two rounds. So if they can get the injuries right there, he could be easily a starter in a couple of years. So I think that's one guy to look out for. But yes, definitely Alberto. I think it's a pretty solid draft, man, to be honest. Cushenberry, Alberto, Moody, Hamler, Jeudy. I think if, and also as well, McTelvin again, defensive tackle. If two or three of them turn out to be starters within the first 12 to 18 months, I think Elway's been on to a winner, and I think he needs to have a very good draft. I think if you look back on the draft from maybe the years in which since we won the Super Bowl, they haven't been great, especially the 2017 draft. So yeah, he has to get it right, man.
Yeah, between the draft and free agency, there's some really big pickups there, and so some really positive times ahead, I think. But your competition is stiff. I'd say the Chargers, you know, they've got some really blue chip talent, but you know, they're working with a new quarterback. The Chiefs, defending champions, and Raiders, we're yet to know what they're going to be. You know, but they've got a lot of potential in their team. You've got a tough division, right?
I'm literally Googling the Chiefs schedule while you're talking to me now, man, because that's the only argument I have against them, which says a lot for the West. Look, I definitely think, and I guess, well, you're obviously a Seahawks fan, you know, you obviously used to be in the same division as us, so, man, this is easily the most, probably the minute, the most talented division in football. You might disagree with me, and there is a fair argument, because obviously Seahawks, 49ers, etc. But look, obviously Chiefs coming in as the champs, as the team everybody wants to beat. The Broncos have a young team, a very young team, and it seems to me like John Elway is sitting there at a poker table. He's all in. His contract's up at the end of 2021. Von Miller's contract is due for renewal in 2021-2022. In my opinion, he's all in. He doesn't have to pay guys for years now. So he's all in that sense. I think in terms of what you said about the Raiders and the Chargers is interesting. I think the Chargers aren't going to be in. I don't think they're going to be in contention for the West. I think the Chargers will struggle. A lot of people in Denver, especially, or in the media, or in circles in Denver at the minute, really think the team that's going to struggle in the West is the Raiders, the whole move from Vegas. I personally think, and it kills me saying it because I don't like them, but I think that Vegas is a perfect fit for the Raiders. Whether or not they can do it, the short term remains to be seen. I think there's massive questions at quarterback. I don't believe a word that those guys are saying in terms of all, you know, the positions are finalized. I still think they could make a move for somebody, but it remains to be seen. I think the Broncos themselves have a difficult schedule. I'm not going to lie. The Chiefs still have to play the same opponents we do, in the sense that they're going to have to play Brady. They're going to have to play Breeze. I don't think this is a foregone conclusion, in the sense that everybody seems to think now already that the West is over before a ball has been picked up. At the end of the day, this Chiefs team, they're the champs. They're the best team in the league. I get that. But if they do this 2 years in a row, I will take my hat off to them and say, well done. I think we're close here now, because eventually, whether it's this season or next season, they're going to have to pay Mahomes. And whenever that happens, it's over. That team will combust, because whenever they paid Von Miller for the Broncos, it started to become an issue. You know, how many more guys can you pay? But to think, you know, how much is Patrick Mahomes going to be on? Obviously, I think Peyton Manning was on 100, 120 million in terms of his contract in Denver over the whole period. You know, they're talking $150-160 million for Mahomes. If that happens, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think the pickup they've made in the first round of the draft at running back is obviously a good prospect, and they've got the time out of him where they don't have to pay him big money over the next few years, and that's somebody that they could, you know, pick up and really, really do well with, and I'm sure he will do well there. But I think at the same time, if you pay Mahomes, you know, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Tyrann Mathieu, Kelsey. I'm happy for the Chiefs in the sense that, you know, their fans waited a long time to win it, but as Broncos fans, we hate them. So I would say don't count another team out of challenging for the West. I'm not going to say that the Broncos are going to challenge for it seriously, but there's no reason why this Broncos team can't go to the playoffs. Absolutely not, because the AFC overall, I think the West is now the biggest division in the AFC at the very, very least.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think you've got a really strong division there. I think in both conferences, it's all about the West. I'm a Seahawks fan, as we've mentioned, and I'm realistic. I think they've got a really tough year ahead of them. Yeah, even the Cardinals are looking like coming, you know, making some moves as well. So it could be a really difficult year. Yeah, I think the Broncos are in a great position. They had a great end to the season. They've only added to that in Casey Boye, and if Jerry Jeudy is what everyone's saying he is, it could only go from strength to strength for you guys.
Hopefully. I don't want to get my chickens up yet, but we'll see what happens. I think it's one of those things, man. Obviously, this season was, yeah, it's supposed to be the real breakout year, Drew Lock now, and we were obviously supposed to play in London, and that's not going to happen. I just hope now at this point there's a season and we'll see what happens. It mightn't be a season that we're used to in terms of crowds and stuff, but yeah, I think if you had to ask me now what the Broncos would do this season, I would say probably 9-7, wild card, and we'll take it from there. But yeah, Chiefs, the Chiefs are reminding me of certain teams, not the Patriots, that have went on to win the Super Bowl and they've struggled the year after. I think Mahomes needs to play lights out the whole year for them to really make a challenge.
Absolutely. Hey, well, I think I agree with you. I think I can see a wild card place for the Broncos ahead. Hey, Michael, thank you very much for your time. Tell all our listeners what's coming up for you guys at Broncos Europe and where they can find you.
Well, look, I obviously appreciate you letting me on, and I'm happy to come on anytime, man. We are on BroncosEurope.com, but mainly we're on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. So on Twitter, we're at BroncosEUR. You can follow me personally if you want. Like, at Denver Europe is my account. And then if you just search for Broncos Europe on both Instagram and YouTube, we've got stuff all over there as well. You're more than welcome. You don't have to be a Broncos fan. Come in, join the chat. As long as you're not a Chiefs fan, you'll be more than welcome. That was a joke.
Hey, thank you very much. And let's go back to the studio.
So it was quite an interesting interview, Duncan. What are your thoughts on their season?
Well, I like how positive Michael was. You know, they know they're up against the Chiefs. They know how big a mountain it is. But also, they know what they've got. And they know they've got a really, really young team. And the window is open with the rookie contract quarterback there. And they can build around him. You know, some really great signings in Casey on the defensive line and AJ Boye at cornerback. And having the cheaper quarterback allows you to do that. So as long as he progresses at the rate he did last year, if he is the guy that we all think he is, I think they could do really well.
I think the Broncos have set themselves up pretty well for the future. And I think they've done that even if Locke isn't the guy. You know, I think he's a great, I quite like him as a quarterback, but I think he's still got a lot to learn. But they have some great players. They've got Cortland Sutton, Noah Fant, and I just think they can be that impact players for the offense. And if Locke doesn't, stumble, it does stumble. I think they've set up really well for the future, like Duncan said, and I wish them kind of well. I'm kind of hoping somebody can challenge the Chiefs. I don't think it'll be this season, but maybe next season.
They've definitely built a team to for Drew Locke to succeed. They went with six offensive players in the draft, four of them at skill position, and I just remember how excited all of the ESPN crew were getting, and couldn't help but think that's probably because it's skill position players that everyone recognises from, or all college football fans recognise. It'll be interesting to see if how Jerry Jeudy does, and he's got some competition within his division from former teammate Henry Ruggs, who we'll get to with the Raiders later down the line. But for Locke, it's definitely sink or swim, isn't it? He's got all of the assets around him, and much like I was saying with Justin Herbert, he's got a lot of progression to do, and he was one of those where you want to see him build from year one to year two, and it's not going to be easy in this off season. I'll stop there.
Yeah, I mean, on offense, absolutely, they've given him everything they can to succeed, and they're all really young. I think the oldest might be, I don't know, Juwan James or Mervyn Gordon, and they're certainly not old. Out of the starters, so that's really impressive. But on defense as well, you know, chasing the quarterback, you've got Bradley Chubb, you've got Von Miller, who are Jarrell Casey. Then on the back end, Justin Simmons just looks absolutely phenomenal at safety. So, you know, they've got some really good players there. If they could just find a few more names on defense, I think they could be thereabouts, certainly fighting the Chargers for that wild card place, I think.
It's interesting because you see teams obviously try and replicate or beat the best teams in the league, and these two have the perfect yardstick in the Chiefs being in their division, but one of them seems to be attacking it, trying to take them down by being a defense first team in the Chargers, whereas the Broncos are just trying to copy them and say you score 40, we'll score 45. So it'll be interesting to see which approach is more effective.
That's a great point. It'd be a good one to watch, right?
I think it'd be quite exciting. But then, you know, if you're not, but if you're a defensive kind of guy or woman, then it might not be that exciting.
Thanks, both of you, and thanks to our two guests. We'll have more previews in the coming weeks, so stay tuned. Next up is the first in our series of great debates. And to start off, we thought we'd go with quite an easy one and quite a controversial one of what the best Super Bowl is in the NFL UK era. So we're counting that since 2000, since the first Wembley game. So Shona, what's your thoughts on the best Super Bowl in that time frame?
Well, I'm quite still relatively new to the sport. It's been seven years now that I've been watching it. So, okay, not that new, but new enough. So I'm going to say my very first Super Bowl I watched, which was the Brother Bowl, so Harbaugh v. Harbaugh. I love their parents being like, we don't care who wins, we're just coming to watch. So I'm like, yeah, sure, you secretly want Jim to win, but I'll blow that slide. I thought it was really exciting because it was the game ended 34-31. It could have been one of the biggest comebacks in the NFL until a few years later, but we won't mention that Super Bowl. But, you know, it was just a little bit too late for that San Francisco squad. But they were really awesome. Like, Colin Kaepernick was doing pretty well. Like, he did get sacked a few times, I believe. But it was quite interesting to see how he was playing. What is interesting is I was actually rooting for the Ravens that game because I didn't really know which team to root for. And then I ended up being obsessed with Jim Harbaugh and went to Michigan last year. So that's kind of funny, little anecdote. So to me, that was one of the best Super Bowls, in my opinion, just because of that family ties they had. And, like, you know, it was kind of like a celebratory occasion anyway, because whatever brother won, the family was going to be pretty happy. And then you can't forget that bolt of lightning that Jacoby Jones did from the when he scored the touchdown
he had a couple in that game, didn't he? Because he had the long touchdown where he fell over and beat two defenders, and then the kickoff return to start the second half.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And then he went on Dancing with the Stars two years later and just did like a whole dance basically full of touchdown celebrations, and I was loving life.
I mean, you mentioned bolt of lightning. Was the turning point, was the big comeback, did that start when they came back out after Beyonce had blown the fuse in the stadium?
Ah, very good.
I was going to say, but from a British perspective, that's got to be one of the worst, just because of how long it went on and how late it was. Even I, as a Ravens fan who'd been waiting years for that to happen, was just like, oh, I'm flagging a bit at this point, but. But yes, it was a great game, but certainly hurt by the power outage, which I guess did make it a bit more of a game though.
I just thought it was a really cool, like, for me it was a really cool for that to be my first ever sort of Super Bowl I watched. I think I did watch other ones when I was a kid, but me and my brother were talking about that the other day, but I don't really remember it as much. And I probably didn't notice how long it was. And then I think I like remember going to bed at like 6 a.m. or something. And I was like, okay, that's quite late for like one Super Bowl game. But yeah, no, I thought it was really cool.
You're young. You can take it. I'm not sure I can take the extra time anymore. But I was just thinking, I'm going to give you a game slightly before that. And I talk about it a lot, but between the Colts and the Saints, when the Saints came out at halftime and onside kicked and recovered it, I just, you know, Peyton has balls the size of boulders to try and do that at halftime in the Super Bowl, and I was just into that team forevermore. They're not my team now; I'm a Seahawks fan, but I like the Saints a heck of a lot, and I like what they did, and that was just a great game. You had Manning on one side, Breeze on the other. I can still remember just the most random things. I was looking at Twitter, I think it was yesterday, so I put up the image of the New Orleans fleur-de-lis, the little emblem, and I said, what's the first player that comes into your head when you see this? And everyone's going, oh, Drew Brees, and they're trying to be cheeky, and Stephon Diggs, but for me it was Marquise Colston, who had just an awesome year as their number one receiver. I think he got over 1,000 yards. Such random names that you don't remember anymore. Devery Henderson and, gosh, who was playing? I think Reggie Bush was still on the team. Sorry?
Jeremy Shockey?
Jeremy Shockey was on the team, wasn't he? What a name. What a name that is. So, yeah, they're all there. It was a really entertaining team. Both were. You had Reggie Wayne on the other side and Peyton Manning. So it was a really good, entertaining Super Bowl between two teams which are full of stars. I really, really enjoyed that one. It was one of my earlier ones. I was out there with friends watching it. It's just really, really memorable for me. Really helped cement my fanship of the sport.
I have to say that one was number two on my list. It was the first one I watched live. Before that, I'd get up half five in the morning on the Monday and fast forward and well watch the game as quickly as I could. And the reason I watched that one first was usually I'd fast forward through the halftime show and it was the Who playing that year. So I said, okay, I've got to watch it. This got to watch that. Not so much live, but I can't fast forward through that. So the logic was to then stay up. But I was just starting to flag when that onside kick you mentioned happened, and it was a great game. And I can't quite remember who had the interception return to seal it. It was Tracy Porter, wasn't it?
Tracy Porter, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great game, and taking down the what was the unstoppable force that was Peyton Manning at the time. Of course, it's now shrouded in a bit of controversy with Bountygate that came out the year after. That,
oh, gosh, yeah.
It wasn't known at the time, but it was that year, wasn't it?
Well, that kind of takes the gloss off, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but I guess it lives in infamy as a result. It becomes famous for a different reason as well.
Maybe I'll change my mind and go Cardinals Steelers. I don't know. We'll put that to one side.
I wonder. Didn't mean to change your mind. I didn't think it would have that.
I'm gonna stick. But yeah, man, I might have to rethink that in the future. I don't know. What's yours? Tell us yours.
For me, I reckon I've got to go with Super Bowl 52, which was Eagles Patriots. I mentioned about the Saints Colts game being great because it took down one behemoth. Was Eagles Patriots was another one of those where it was the unstoppable Patriots being toppled by the Eagles. It had the Philly special, which was a great play, and got everyone talking and still does now. Nick Foles obviously had his 27-2 season, but he was the Super Bowl MVP and resurrected the season that Carson Wentz should have been MVP. It was a back and forth game, and I was looking at the stats in the build up to this. I had a memory that it was more of a lots of lead changes. The Patriots only actually ever led once, relatively late. I think it was 33-32. But Foles and Brady going throw for throw, and it was. I think that's got to be my favourite. Maybe a bit of recency bias though.
I think that's a really, really good pick. I think watching those players go toe-to-toe was really entertaining. I feel great for the players of the Eagles for winning. There's some really deserving names in there, not least Fletcher Cox, who's just outstanding. But the Eagles fans just made it so hard to cheer for them that year, doing stupid things, going out and rioting and punching horses and all sorts. And I'm not...
underdogs.
The old underdog thing, oh my word. Every time, every single time. But they just made it so hard to cheer for them. And I generally don't like the Patriots very much anyway, because they kept beating us. So it made it really hard to want either team to win for me in that Super Bowl. Yeah, really entertaining game. I'm pleased with the players, but for me it's too hard to... I like to... Yeah, find a team that I want to win and, you know, cheer for someone on the day. So it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I do agree with you actually about the fans. There's just something about Eagles fans. They just seem to think they are this like enigma where they can just do whatever they want and make this like hostile atmosphere. Like I found that when they played in London games as well. I said it was my least favorite game out of the three I went to see because they were just so hostile to... I think it was Eagles-Jags. Was it Eagles-Jags? I think it was. And they were just, like, shouting at Jaguar fans. And I was just like, I just don't understand. Like, you're here to watch a game and enjoy yourself. So I agree with Duncan on that one. It was a really good game. And kind of glad in a way that Brady didn't do another comeback. So I think I might have been sick if that happened. But, yeah... I had two Super Bowls in a row where I wasn't really rooting for any team, which was Eagles, Patriots, and then Patriots, Rams. So this one was quite refreshing because I was really not rooting for the 49ers. So I was full on the Chiefs train.
I mean, just a disclaimer about the Eagles fans. A lot of the time it is just a minority that spoils it for everyone else. So I know loads of Eagles fans and they're cracking people, not least Johnny, one of our writers, top bloke. But, you know, it's always a minority that spoils it for everyone else, and it did for me that day.
I have to say, I do remember the one time obviously we all know that the Wembley atmosphere or the London Games atmosphere is very friendly, but the one time I've seen any abuse was when a friend of mine was in a Tom Brady jersey and got about four Eagles fans, obviously not in that seat or not playing against them, but they were giving him dogs abuse and swearing at him and things. Which it was, I'm sure it was in good fun, but it was a bit of that's not what you usually have here.
Yeah, that's not what we do. It's one of those few sports over here where you don't have to segregate the fans, and I hope that never happens. But
Joe, like my brother's best friend's an Eagles fan. He's one of the most nicest person I've ever met, and I just feel like if all of you could just be like that would be great. But you know, there's just that wee minority that likes to be. Maybe it's the whole Sunny in Philadelphia thing. They're trying to be cool, and they're not.
That's a fan base that I think it'll be difficult to tell. You're not going to the games when they start up in September or whenever they start. I think.
Jesus, yeah, God, I'd love to see that happening.
I think we've been quite lucky there at last, you know, since the NFL UK era started. We've only really had one bad Super Bowl that I can remember.
Oh, I wonder if you all agree on if it's the same one.
Well, the Rams.
Jesus.
I like a good defensive display, but it was difficult.
I think I fell asleep and then, no, I did fall asleep actually, and woke up because Barrett, who is our owner's or the website's husband, fake celebrated. And I was like, oh, so excited, it's happening. He's like, no, I just knew you were sleeping.
Oh, that's just funny. Well, that would have been the most exciting part of the night, probably.
It actually was. That's all I remember from it, to be honest with you.
Other highlights quickly? Obviously, the two catches in the New York games, Manningham and Tyree.
Very exciting games, but a bit odd. I mean, the winning touchdown for the second Giants Super Bowl win was just ridiculous, and him trying not to score it, and yet he...
Oh, God, yeah. Was it Bradshaw? He curled up into a ball and tried, and he fell in.
Yeah.
He's like, hang on, do I, don't I? Oh, well. Well, I think between Bounty Gate and possible Eagles fans mischief, you probably won that one, I think, Shona.
I think that's just about right.
Yeah.
Well, that's all for this week's show. Thanks to Isaac and Michael for speaking to us, and good luck for the season ahead. Don't forget to check out great content on our website and Gridiron Wine, a unique take on the NFL. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts and on the topics we've discussed. And of course, any feedback you may have is welcome. You can tweet us at 99 yards. Thanks for listening.
Flexibility can go a long way. By refinancing your newer used auto loan with PenFed, you can lower your monthly payments for more flexibility in your budget. You can even schedule your first payment for up to 60 days from the date of your refinance. Calculate how much you could save at PenFed.org/auto-refi or call 1-800-247-5626 to apply. Membership is open to everyone. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Thanks. Order breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru. Tell yourself you'll wait to eat it at work, but it smells way too good. So you eat it right there in the McDonald's parking lot meal. There's a meal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, get any size iced coffee for 99 cents until 11 a.m. and pair it with your favorite breakfast sandwich or one of our tasty bakery treats. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.